Hi, thank you. I'm pleased to be here today. I did want to let you know, though, that Andrea Richardson, my co-author, did most of the analyses for this presentation, but she was unable to attend, so I'm presenting for her. So I will do my best to answer any questions about the details of the analysis, but there are some things that only she probably can address. I have nothing to disclose. Okay. And in terms of background, I probably don't need to say a whole lot to this audience about increasing rates of obesity and the health consequences associated with that. In this particular presentation, we're looking more at eating behaviors that are associated with obesity. And stress has been shown to be associated with weight gain and obesogenic eating behaviors. Stress can also cause physiological responses that cause weight gain independent of eating behaviors and diet. And we found that, low socioeconomic mothers may be particularly vulnerable to stress and are also disproportionately burdened by severe obesity. And the population that we're looking at is a population of women who have a children enrolled in the WIC program, which is a supplemental nutritional program for women, infants, and children. So there have been few studies that have been able to disentangle how stress may be associated with obesity through eating behaviors and diet quality from other stress-related risk factors that are independent of diet. So our basic objective for our study is to test the direct and indirect pathways from perceived stress to severe obesity through eating behaviors and diet quality using structural equation modeling. And I'll talk a little bit about the SEM modeling in a bit. So we hypothesized that high levels of stress would be associated with severe obesity for low-income women. First, indirectly, through eating behaviors and diet quality, and then directly through non-diet related risk factors. And we also hypothesize that these mechanisms may operate differently for obese versus severely obese women. So I'll talk a little bit about our study population. This was a convenient sample of women with a child enrolled in the WIC program in a county in North Carolina. We conducted the data collection, actually that's incorrect, we did it in 2012. So these women had a child who was at least 6 months old, but less than 5 years old. So they were coming into the WIC clinic for other services, and we recruited them and enrolled them into our study. And once they were given an incentive to participate. So we measured their height and their weight at the clinic. They also self-administered a paper questionnaire that was asked questions about demographics, perceived stress, and eating behaviors, and I'll talk a little bit more about those scales in a minute. We also conducted a dietary recall with those participants, so we did the 24-hour dietary recall using the USDA's AMPM software, which we'll talk again about in a few minutes. And this study was approved by RTI's Institutional Review Board. So demographic questions, we asked about household income in three different categories. We asked about age, the age range from 18 to 44, race and ethnicity, including non-Hispanic white, non-Hispanic black, non-Hispanic other, and Hispanic, marital status, and educational level, which was just no college versus some college. We also administered the perceived stress scale, so that's a 14-item. Scale with scores ranging from 0 to 56. So they responded to these questions. The responses are something like never up to very often. So an example question being the last month, how often have you felt you were unable to control the important things in your life? And then we also asked the emotional eating, uncontrolled eating, and cognitive restraint questions from the validated eating behavior scale. So emotional eating has three questions where a lower score is better. So they respond again with level of agreement or frequency. So an example question would be, when I feel blue, I overeat. And then uncontrolled eating is nine questions. And an example would be sometimes when I start eating, I just can't seem to stop. And then finally, cognitive restraint is 6 questions. In this case, a higher score is better. An example would be, I do not eat some foods because they make me feel fat. And so then the respondents indicate their level of agreement with that question. So our dietary quality measure, we use the at USDA's automated multi-pass method. We had 101 participants that that did their dietary recall on site using the food model booklets, and we had measuring cups and the materials so that they could estimate the quantities that they consumed. And then for about half of those participants, over half of them, we also collected a second day of dietary recall by phone for those participants who agreed to do the second day. We took that data then and we converted the food intakes to nutrients and food groups using the USDA SurveyNet software. About half of the foods were already had data on nutrients and food groups within the software, and about half of them were coded and reviewed by a registered dietitian. And we used that data to calculate the Healthy Eating Index, which some of you may be familiar with, which this is a measure of diet quality that consists of 12 components, where a higher score indicates better adherence with the 2010 dietary guidelines. So the HEI is updated with each update of the dietary guidelines. So now that the 2015 will be coming out at some point in a couple of years, there will be an HEI 2015. So the components are fruits, vegetables, grains, meats, fats and oils, sodium, alcoholic beverages, and added sugars. So for those respondents who provided both days of dietary recall, we averaged their estimates in the analysis. So I'll say a little bit about the structural equational modeling. So this is a pathway-based approach that allows an estimation among latent, unobserved, and observed effects transmitted over combinations of paths. So it's basically a regression modeling approach. So in our case, we're looking at the relationship from perceived stress to weight status, including direct and indirect pathways through eating behaviors and diet quality. And we controlled for income, age, race, ethnicity, marital status, whether the first day was a typical day for their dietary recall, and whether they had one or two days of dietary recall. So this shows the full pathways in the structural equational modeling. So you can see that there's several different pathways. The stress could affect eating behaviors, such as emotional eating, uncontrolled eating, cognitive restraint, which then affects diet quality, which then affects weight status. So another path would be that stress affects diet quality directly through some other mechanism that's not being captured through emotional eating, uncontrolled eating, and cognitive restraint, which then that diet quality affects weight status. And then finally, stress could affect obesity directly through other physiological responses. So just to give you a summary of our demographics, about 40% of the women in the study were either moderately or severely obese. About 15% of those severely obese, almost double the national average among women of this age group. So the average BMI for the group as a whole was 32. The highest percentage of women were non-Hispanic black, followed by non-Hispanic white participants. And most of the participants were fairly young, in the 18 to 24 or 25 to 29 year age range. Then a summary of the different scales that we administered as part of the survey. On the perceived stress scale, the average score was 26. For reference, for a college student, the average score is typically around 23. So higher score means more stress, and you can see that there is in sort of increasing level of stress for category of obesity increases. So in general, we see for more obese women, higher perceived stress, higher cognitive restraint, which it may be a little different from what we might have expected, more uncontrolled eating, but sort of mixed results, and more emotional eating. The HEI index here, so those scores range from 0 to 100. For this population, it was an average of 44. For the U.S. population, it typically is around 55 to 56. So not particularly high, actually, for the general population, but definitely lower for this population. And interestingly, the HEI does decline for the first three categories, but it's much higher for the severely obese category. And I think this is a peculiarity related to how the healthy eating index actually can be higher if you eat more, because you get more, you may have more servings of healthy food. So not all aspects of it are calibrated for the amount of calories that people consume. So the results for the structural equation modeling, so only the statistically significant pathways are shown in this picture. So first you can see that perceived stress was directly and positively associated with severe obesity, emotional eating, and uncontrolled eating. However, we did not find an indirect pathway from perceived stress to weight status through eating behaviors and diet quality. So that was a bit unexpected from what we had originally hypothesized. We did find that higher cognitive restraint was associated with higher diet quality. And counter to intuition, we found higher diet quality scores linked to severe obesity. But again, that could be how the HEI measures diet quality could have contributed to that particular finding. So basic summary and conclusion. So in a sample of low-income women with children, perceived stress was directly and positively associated with severe obesity, independent of eating behaviors and diet quality. So perceived stress was also directly and positively associated with unhealthy eating behaviors. But we found no evidence that perceived stress influenced weight status through eating behaviors and diet quality. So this suggests that some non-diet behavior-related mechanisms, for example, physical activity or physiological mechanisms associated with stress, may contribute to severe obesity. So and based on this, we believe that behavioral interventions aimed at reducing stress may improve dietary behaviors and reduce severe obesity in low-income mothers. And then just wanted to acknowledge a few of our limitations and strengths. So we do acknowledge this is a cross-sectional study. It's a small convenience sample that may not be generalizable. We didn't have the complete sample for the second dietary recall day, and we lack physical activity measures. So some of the strengths is that we do have detailed diet and eating behavior data for this population. We were able to measure height and weight directly rather than relying on self-report. We were able to measure stress using a validated method and able to simultaneously estimate multiple pathways to severe obesity. So with that, I can open it up to questions. Thank you. Yes, that's correct.
So I'm curious, do you think that BMI might be a little bit skewed because maybe they have a long time loss their baby weight, or were there any questions about what their weight was prior to being pregnant? Or just curious.
Yeah, no, we didn't have measures of what their weight was, how it had changed over time, and I'm not sure how reliable it would have been. Originally, we had hoped to enroll mothers where their children were at least a year old, but we were having difficulty in recruiting enough study participants. So we, yep. Yes. Right.
And then the other thing about cognitive restraint is the fact that there's now, you know, a whole body of literature that shows that the more restraint is actually, the heavier people get because of the associated overeating after eating restraint and things like that.
Oh, so compensating for. Yeah, and it's true with the HEI that it, or with how dietary recall studies are done, it is sort of known there is some level of underreporting, because if you look at the average the average calories consumed from dietary recall is done under NHANES, there would not be an obesity epidemic if those numbers were correct. So, yeah, so it's known that there is some underreporting.
Well, I mean, people know that they're overweight. I mean, in almost
right. Right. Yeah, all good points. Right. Yeah, and I guess I didn't explicitly address that. So those questions are actually combined into a scale. So you have a single index that represents emotional eating, a single index that represents cognitive restraint, a single index that represents the stress scale. So those responses are sort of summed up to get a combined scale. So we're not including each question individually. Right, yeah, I agree. That's something we could investigate to kind of look at individual questions. She was asking first about for the different questionnaires that we used, whether we include all of the individual questions in the analysis. And I was explaining, in fact, no, they're combined into an index. So you have a stress level index that's based on the total number of questions. So you have one index, and then she was suggesting then doing the analysis, breaking out those individual questions, which is something that could be explored. Are there other questions? No. So we had no. We didn't take any biological samples during this. Other questions? Okay, thank you very much.